Good evening, everyone, from Yerushalayim HaKodesh. Tonight, at least this evening here in Yerushalayim, tonight we're going to be discussing a little the facts about the service in the Beis HaMikdash and around it, so we'll get a little oriented and understand when we discuss in the Gemara's Rachum certain aspects, we'll know what we're talking about and be able to visualize it and we'll understand it with more clarity. Before I start, just a little introduction about the concept of learning Kachim. Now, Kachim, Seder Kachim, which begins with Zvachim, seems to be not practical nowadays. We haven't had Kabbalah since the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed 1900 years ago, approximately, and seems to be irrelevant and unimportant. But the truth of the matter is, it has been correct for a couple of reasons. And I refer to you, if you look at the sources on the source page, source number one, the Hebrew sources in the PDF, quote 1.1 from the Gemara above Matin of Kufi Dalid. I'll say it over in English quickly. The story is that Rabbi Baravua met Eliyahu Hanavi in a cemetery. It was a non-Jewish cemetery. Eliyahu Hanavi is a Gedolim, he's Pinchas. And he had a whole discussion with him. And finally, Rabbi Baravua asked Eliyahu, what are you doing in a cemetery? So he says, didn't you learn Seder Taharos? And Seder Taharos, he says clearly that the Tzavarim of a Goy are not Metame. So therefore, there's no problem with me being in a cemetery of Goy. So he told him, Rabbi Baravua says, Ba'aba lo Matina. The Shita Matina? Question mark. In other words, four Siddurim, the four normal Siddurim that I learned, as Rashi explains, Moed, Nashim, Mezikim, and Kachim, I don't even know those. So you expect me to know Taurus also? Taurus is a Seder that's not so commonly learned. So the Chofetz Chaim points out from here that it's clear that Seder Kachim was a Seder that was commonly learned. He labels all four Siddurim together with Moed, Nashim, Mezikim, which are applicable nowadays. Seder Kachim fits in with that too. And of course, we know that the Talmud Bavli was written in Bavel, and for that reason, Seder Zrayim, there is no Talmud Bavli, because it was not relevant. But there is a Seder Kachim. So even though it doesn't seem to be applicable, but nonetheless, they studied Kachim. So why is that? Why do they study Kachim if it's really not practical? And the answer is because the Gemara says in the end of Menachos and in a few places that although today we don't have the practical application of the Avodah, but if we study the Avodah, we study the Halachos, and then it's as if we are Makav the Kabbalah. It's for that reason that we say Ezim Mekoman every morning in Shachris, that it should be as if we are Makav Kabbalah. And Chazal also tell by Sefer Yecheskel, Yecheskel was a Navi in Babel, which is Chutzlars, of course, during Golas Babel, and Hashem gave Yecheskel the description of the Beis HaMikdash. And Yecheskel thought, no need to tell Bnei Yisrael now what the Beis HaMikdash looks like. I'll wait till Golas Babel. We'll come back to Eretz Yisrael, and then I'll give him the instructions. And Hashem said, no, it's not what you think. It's not just because we're in Chutz La'aretz now, so the Beis HaMikdash is gone. No. You'll study and the blueprint of the Beis HaMikdash, and so this you're building the Beis HaMikdash. Interestingly, because Yom Tov wrote a sefer explaining the Beis HaMikdash of Yecheskel, and he writes, it's not enough just to study Sefer Yecheskel, but you have to visualize it. You have to write it out, you have to map it out. And today's day and age with computers and three-dimensional, it becomes even more possible to actually visualize the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, and it's as if you're actually building the Beis HaMikdash. So learning about Kabbalah, it's important because it's as if you lack of Kabbalah, but you should also know, you should also understand what you're saying, like the Mishabura brings, saying Ezim Mekoma is not enough, you should be knowing the Halachas also while you say it. The Chofetz Chaim was a known advocate for the studying of Kachim. There's even a letter which he gave his son in 1931, 2 years before he was Nifter, they were opening a Kol Kachim, and he sent his son to Riga, for the rich people of Riga, instructing everyone that they must give $100. $100 in those days went a lot farther than it goes today. And to give $100 per person to support this call with the Lenin Kutchin. So Lenin Kutchin is important. Again, it may not be practical today, but it's a Zidhi Makam Kabonis, is a mitzvah that unfortunately we haven't done, we haven't been able to do for the last 1900 years, but our way of performing them is by studying and learning the material. I mentioned briefly in the same source page with the Hebrew sources 1.2, a Gemara in Megillah, a very interesting Gemara, where Haman and Mordechai was fasting, and Haman was ordered by the king to take Mordechai and put him on a horse and parade around, and Haman comes to take Mordechai, put him on the horse. He sees that Mordechai is giving shir, and he turns to him and he says, "What were you teaching in the shir?" He says, "I was teaching that when the Beis Hamikdash was standing, so a person brought a cup of mincha, he brought an offering of flour, and just a small amount of the flour, a komet, a fistful of the flour went on the mizbech, and that was it, and that was machabe." And when Haman heard this, he said, "Your small fistful of flour outweighed my 10,000 shekel kesef, all the money I offered to fill the Jews, your small amount of flour outweighed it." And the question is, why was Mordechai particularly learning this dinner, the cup of mincha, on that particular day? And the answer is because the day was the second day of Pesach, when Yom Kippur Korban Omer, and he was studying the dinim of Korban Omer. And the Gra points out, they weren't Makav Korban Omer then, because again, they were in Bavel. But the fact that they studied it, it's as if they were Makav it, and Haman realized that was enough of a power to overpower his money, because they were studying the Halachos of Kabbalah. So that's why it's important to understand. We're going to try to, in a shiur today, use a couple of sources, as you can see on the source page, which will describe the Beis Hamikdash and the functions of the certain chambers as much as you could, based, of course, on the Maseches Midos, using some of the common diagrams and some other visual aids newly invented. If you go... Source number two is a link that takes you to the Kohel page from the Maseches Midos, and in the green square. In the green square, you see a list of graphics and study material. The second graphic over there, which says that the Ferris Yisrael diagram of the Beis Hamikdash, this is a famous diagram, which is the most common diagram that people are aware of. The Ferris Yisrael wrote a parish on the Mishnah. I'm not going to go into the whole history of this diagram, but this diagram was not actually written by the Tiferes Yisrael, and therefore there are certain discrepancies between the diagram itself and what he writes in the explanation. But this is the most common diagram known of the Beis Hamikdash, so we'll try to, over here it's numbered, and the other pages have the explanations of each of these chambers, each of these numbers, what they correspond to. Before we begin, on the Hebrew source page, I quoted in source 2.1 a bunch of Mishnayos from Maseches Kehillim, and I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but just basically we'll do what's relevant for us. Mishnah Vav begins, Esek Kedusha Sen. There are 10 different levels of Kedusha, meaning the different locations have different Kedusha, and there are 10 different levels of locations which have different levels of Kedusha. And it begins with Eretz Yisrael, which is not so important for us, but we're going to start with Mishnah Zayin, Ayurash HaMakofetz Choma Mekudoshes Mimena. In the Mishnah, in Parashas Naso, which we learned yesterday in Chutz La'aretz, you have the mitzvah of sending Temeim outside of the expected Machnos, and there are different levels of Temeim. You have Machne Leviyah, and you have Machne Shechina. And the Mishkan was in Machne Shechina, around it was Machne Leviyah, around it was Machne Yisroel. And there's different levels of Tuma. In Metzorah, it is banned from all three Machnos, it must be outside of Machne Yisroel. A Zav can be in Machne Yisroel, but it cannot be Machne Leviyah, while a Tmei Meis can be in Machne Leviyah, but he cannot be in Machne Shechina. Now this is the way it was in the Midbar. In Yerushalayim, it was the same thing. It was Machne Shechina, and Machne Leviyah and Machne Yisroel. Machne Yisroel is the city itself, the walled city of Yerushalayim, from what was sanctified then, and the Torah cannot be in the walled city, and it can be in other walled cities, but that's not important for us. So Har Habayis, that is Machne Yisroel. From Har Habayis, it becomes already Machne Leviyah, and in Machne Leviyah, Ezov, that's already in Mishnah Ches, Habayis is holier. The Zavim, the Zavos, the Nidos, and the Yodos cannot go in. The next is the Chel. We'll get to that in a moment. And then comes Machne Shechina. And Machne Shechina is the Azara, where they do not allow the Azara, where you do not allow the Tmei Meis, etc., to enter. That is Machne Shechina. So, if a person would basically, now, Yerushalayim itself has Kedusha, has a special Kedusha, that is a place, there are different types of Kabbanos. There are two basic groups of Kabbanos, Kadosh Kedoshim and Kachim Kalim. The Kachim Kedoshim, the older Kabbanos, and the Kachim Kalim are the lighter Kedusha. There are a few differences between the two. One of the major differences between the two is that Kachim Kalim can be eaten in the entire city of Yerushalayim. The entire city of Yerushalayim, you can eat Kachim Kalim, while Kachim Kedoshim cannot be taken out of the Azara. Where exactly the Azara is, we will point that out to you soon. But in Yerushalayim, you can eat Kachim Kalim, as opposed to Kachim Kedoshim. Kachim Kalim are also eaten by everyone, meaning even Yisraelim, as opposed to Kachim Kedoshim, that can only be eaten to Kohanim. There may be some small exceptions to that rule, but to the first part of the rule, even Kachim Kalim, certain parts are only eaten to Kohanim. But so Yerushalayim had Kedusha as far as the Kabbanos, that Kabbanos can be eaten in Yerushalayim. Once the carbon was taken out of Yerushalayim, it became fossil, it was Yotze, and even if you brought it back, you cannot eat it, you have to burn it. If a person is in Yerushalayim, that is considered, as we said, Machne Yisroel. We ascend now into Machne Leviyah. Har Habayis itself is Machne Leviyah. We're sticking with the Hebrew source page 3.1, a Mishnah and Midos. And the Mishnah and Midos, Perek Beis Mishnah Aleph, source 3.1, Har Habayis are Chamesh Mal Samal Chamesh Mal Samal. Har Habayis was 500 Amos by 500 Amos square. Let's not get into the whole detail of how big an Amos is. There are so many different opinions, but roughly we'll say it's about half a meter. That's keeping it safe. I want to take you just 1 second. Just 1 second, we're getting a link up. Is there any questions? Okay. Follow this link I want you to follow this link that was just posted on the site. Just a couple words about this website itself and this model. There are various models of the Harbais and the Beis Hamikdash. This model over here was designed by a person in Shalayim named Zalman Kohen Shlita. He's considered one of the top experts on the subject of the Beis Hamikdash. And this model can be seen in the famous Kotel tunnels right outside the Kotel Maravi. If you've been there to show, you tell the Kotel tunnels, there's this beautiful model built to scale, designed by Abzama Koren. And you can look for some other links on this page also, but this particular link shows you what it would look like if you entered Har HaBayis from the south. Now the Mishnah says that from the south of Har HaBayis, until you reach the Azariah, until you reach the main courtyard, you had the longest distance, meaning from the south to the Azariah was farther than from any other wall to the Azariah, like north, east, or west. The wall you see on the right side is the wall of the Azariah, and the white building in the background is the Heichal. On the bottom of the steps leading up to that wall, on the right side, you see a small white fence, and that small white fence is called the Sorek. Now, what exactly is the function of the Sorek? So, for that, let's go to source 4.1, again in the Hebrew sources, where the Mishnah says, that Nimi Menu Sorek. Once you enter the Harabayis, the next fence, the next stage you got to was the Sorek, and Gavar Sorek Tvachim. It was 10 Tvachim high, Ushlosh Yitzreik brought this Hayusham, and there were 13 breaches in the Sorek. Why? The Greeks, when they, the Hellenists, when they occupied the Beis HaMikdash before the story of Hanukkah, they breached the Sorek in 13 different places, Chazru v'Gadlu. And then when the Hashmonaim came and did Chanukah Samayis and liberated the Beis HaMikdash and did Chanukah Samayis, they fenced the Sorek back again. And they made a tekona that every place where the Yevonim originally breached the Soreg, that's where you have to bow down. Now, what is so special about the Soreg that the Yevonim decided to breach in 13 places? So it's fascinating news. If you go to our source page, source number 10 on the source number 10, take a look at two interesting pictures. And the reason why I bring these pictures are because of the entire Beis HaMikdash that's been destroyed, there are very few artifacts that remain that we can actually pinpoint and say these things came from the Beis HaMikdash. And one of them is what you see in the picture over here. There are actually two pictures. One is a picture of an authentic artifact, and the second one is like a replica. This is a stone in Greek, with an inscription in Greek. We know from Josephus, the historian from the second verse of Megisha, the Soreg had stones written in Greek and Latin warning any non-Jew that he is punishable by death if he passes the Soreg. And the stone you see on the right is, or part of the stone, is in the Israel Museum. We know the entire inscription because a complete such stone has been found in a city today in the museum in Istanbul. So you know exactly what it says. It says any foreigner who walks past this is punishable by death. So these are one of the few artifacts actually remaining from the Beis HaMikdash that we can pinpoint today is this this stone over here. So this is the Soreg, which was which actually was the end of the territory where non-Jews could go in. Non-Jews were permitted onto Har HaBayis, and it says in Yishayahu, Kibesi Beitzvila Yikaro Chol HaAmim, my house will be a house of prayer for all nations. And likewise, when Shlomo HaMelech inaugurated the Beis HaMikdash, his inauguration focused on the fact that this is a center of prayer. It's a center of tefila for Jews and non-Jews alike. So for the non-Jews are permitted on the Har HaBayis and to pray, but they were not allowed past a certain spot, and that was the story. So we continue in past the Soreg, and we get to the area of the Azara and the walls. Which diagram should we use? We're going to We're going to stick with the Tiferes Yisrael diagram, or what's called the Tiferes Yisrael diagram. You may have a copy of it. It's found in Mishnayos. It's easy. It's accessible. If you have a Tiferes Yisrael Mishnayos. Take a look at the diagram. It's a little hard to... to understand so much from the top view what's going on here, but there are actually two major sections. There's the bottom section, which is a square, 135 amos by 135 amos. That's the bottom section, and then the top section, which is rectangular. In it, you have the top of it has like an upside down T, which is the Heichal and the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which we'll get to later. We're going to start from the bottom, from the Ezras Noshim on up. So the bottom is a square chamber, 135 amos by 135 amos. This is called the Ezras Noshim. The Ezras Noshim, you have to be confused with what we know today as the Ezras Noshim, where the women, that's a place only for women. It meant that this is usually where the women went because they had no reason to continue farther in. If they had a reason to go in, they went in. But in general, they had no reason to go farther in, so they stayed here. This was as far as they went, and that's why it's called the Ezras Noshim. The Ezras Noshim is called Azara. First of all, the word Azara is a courtyard, and it's in Azara, but it is not yet Machane Shechina. It is still Machane Leviyah, but it's like an addition to Machane Shechina. So in other words, Chachomim, the Gemara in Yavama says it's King Yehoshaphat, in the first place Hamikdash, added it on, declared this area also to have certain levels of Kedusha beyond what was really required from the Torah. The Gra explains that he actually built the Ezras Noshim. He was the first one to add this to the Beis Hamikdash, was in the days of King Yehoshaphat. So this room is added on, it's a square room, and as we mentioned, and there are four rooms in the four different corners, and there's an extra small little structure, number 15, if you're following with us. Number 15, a small little structure in the courtyard itself. That small structure is a room of the Sanhedrin. The Gemara Sanhedrin says that there were three Sanhedros on Harbais, one at the entrance to Harbais, one at the entrance to the Azara, and one in the Lishkas Hagodes, which we'll get to later. So that small room sitting in the Ezras Noshim is the Sanhedrin. In the four corners, there are four different chambers which have different functions. It starts with the bottom left, which is the southeast corner number 11. That was the Lishkas HaNazirim, Nazir, a person who made a vow not to drink wine. When the Nazir was over, he would come and bring certain korbanos. He would have to shave his hair and burn it underneath the shlamim, and the cooking of the shlamim was done in that chamber over there, Lishkas HaNazirim. That's 11. 12, on the right side, is Lishkas HaEtzim. That is where they stored the wood for the Mizbech. They stored the wood for the Mizbech, and the Kohanim, who were Bali Mumin, who had a blemish, who could not serve in the Beis HaMikdash, they could not serve in the Mizbech, but they could do other functions, and one of the functions that they did was that they would be chopping up the wood and checking it for worms. If it was wormy, then it was not respectful to use this wood on the Mizbech, and it was disqualified. So that was done in the Lishkas HaEtzim. Two other points about the Lishkas HaEtzim. Number one is that in the second Beis HaMikdash, there was no Aron visible. The Aron was around in the first Beis HaMikdash, and at the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, King Yoshiyahu ordered the Aron to be buried and hidden away because he knew the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed. He did not want the Aron to go into Kolos, and therefore he ordered the Levian to hide it away. Warren Horius, we learned it last week in the Daf Yomi, so you know that according to the Gemara in the Mishnah in Maseches Shkolim, it was hidden underneath the stones in the Lishkas HaEtzim. The Mishnah Shkolim tells the story of a Kohen who was busy chopping wood, and all of a sudden he noticed that the floor was uneven. He realized something had moved over there, and he wanted to tell other people, and he died, and then they knew that that's exactly the place where the Aron is stored. So that's the Mishkas Ha'itzim. That's one point. Second point, Mishkas Ha'itzim is that in Tisha B'Av, in the year of the Churban, which functioned around 68-70, to the way we count today, that's when a Roman soldier threw a flaming torch into this chamber, and the chamber caught fire, and from there the Beis HaMikdash was set ablaze. So that's room number 12. Room number 13, which is on top, is Lishkat HaMetzorayim. That's the Metzorah, a leper. He has to be outside the Machmeh, he has to be outside the Yerushalayim, but when he is finally cured from his tzaras, he comes in, and he not only comes in, but he's required to bring three korbanos, and in order to be able to come to the Azara, he has to be tovel. And there's a special room there where the mikvah, where the Metzorayim were tovel. They dipped in the mikvah, and then they were able to go in and be makiv the asham, which required their presence to be there for various parts of the korban. So that was Lishkas HaMetzorayim. And number 14, on the left side, is Lishkas Beis Shmanya, the place where they store the oil and the flour for the mincha. The person brought a cup of mincha, it was brought with oil and with flour, and that was stored in that room over there. Now, there was an interesting system, how it ran. This is the Gemara in Shkolim. The Gemara in Shkolim says that the person who collected the money was not the person who distributed the flour and oil. In other words, you went to one office and you paid for your carbon which you were required to bring, and the person gave you some type of receipt, and you came with this receipt to the Lishkas Beis Shmanya, to the room of the oil and the flour, and based on the receipt you have, you got your carbon, and with that, you went to the Azara and you brought your carbon to the Kohen. Okay. Next, we see number 16. Number 16 is a staircase. It's a staircase of 15 semicircle steps. Now, in this diagram, it doesn't exactly look like a semicircle, I must admit. Again, the diagram is a story in itself. It's not that the Pesach Shalom himself who made the diagram. It went through a lot of different editions, so not everything that's in the diagram, you know, can be vouched for its accuracy. It's to give an idea. The Mishnah tells us that there were 15 semicircle steps that went up from Ezras Noshim to Ezras Yisrael. Ezras Yisrael is the next courtyard. We didn't enter that yet. There are 15 semicircle steps. Each one is a height of half an amma. So in other words, we're talking about 7.5 ammas difference in the height of the Ezras Yisrael, which is on top, and the Ezras Noshim, the room which we were in until now. These 15 steps were also where the Levim stood, and they played musical instruments in Simchas Beis HaShoeva and Sukkot. Simchas Beis HaShoeva was in the Ezras Noshim. Since time is flying, we're going to proceed on into number 18, and that is Shah Nicanor, the gates of Nicanor. Now, who is Nicanor? I have the story here in the Hebrew sources 5.1, in the Hebrew sources 5.1, I'm not going to review the whole story, but briefly, Nicanor was a person who went to Alexandria, and he made these wonderful gates from bronze, nechoshes, copper, and he brought him to Yerushalayim, and the way a storm threatened him, decapitated the ship. And he threw one of the gates overboard, and then they told him we have to throw the other one overboard also, and he held on to it and says, if that's going, I'm going with it. And the storm subsided, and a miracle happened when he came to Israel, in the Akko Yafo, depending on which version you have. They found that the other gate that he had thrown overboard had stuck to the boat and was there. So that's Shah Nicanor. That is the main gate that leads into the Azara. Just a couple words about Nicanor. Briefly, one of the interesting archaeological things about Nicanor is that the tomb of Nicanor was found in Yerushalayim on Har HaTzofim and Mount Scopus. They found a nice burial plot, a large burial plot, which means it must have been a rich aristocratic family. and it had the name. It says, this is the family of Nicanor, the one who made the gates. And one of the ancestors had an inscription that says, and it's Nicanor Alachso, which could mean Nicanor the Alexandrian. So that is, again, an archaeological artifact that relates directly to the Beis HaMikdash. We continue into the Azara. A couple words about the Azara. We're now in the second room. There's the bottom room. We told you the Ezra's Nashim. The Azara is Machane Shechina. You now enter Machane Shechina. The Azara has special rules of itself. The Azara has special rules of itself. The dimensions of the Azara are 187 amos from east to west and 135 width. This is the Azara. This is Machane Shechina. And the certain rules apply to Machane Shechina only, which means certain Temeim who are permitted into the Machane Leviya and Ezra's Nashim are forbidden into the Azara. And also, this is Machane Shechina, the Kodesh Kodashim, the Kabbalah, can be eaten only in this area. All Kodesh Kodashim, which include the Chatas and the Nashim, and Zil Chesham and Tzibur for that matter, can be eaten only in this area. If they're taken outside, they're yotze, and they become possible. So they can be eaten in this area only. And another thing is that shechting kabbalas, there are different areas for shechting kabbalas. Kodesh Kodashim can only be shechted north of the Mizbeach. We'll get to that soon. But the Kodeshim Kalim can be shechted anywhere in the Azara. So if they're shechted within this confine of 187 by 135, fine. Anywhere outside, if they're shechted, they're possible. And disqualified. So that is the Azara that we're looking at. The Azara is divided up into different sections. The first 11 amos width, the 11 amos width is called Ezras Yisrael, and that's where the Yisraelim stand, and it's considerably smaller than the Ezras Nashim. But the diagram, the blueprint of the Beis HaMikdash was given b'nevuah and handed down from Navi to Navi, and David HaMelech says, Hakol b'chsav miyad Hashem alay yiskil. Everything was given to me, written down, he got it from Shmuel HaNavi. You can't make any changes, you can't make any adjustments. This is the way it's supposed to be, that's the way it's supposed to be. Well, we do know that there was an ace in the Beis HaMikdash, that there was never a shortage of space. Hashem is not limited by time, and Hashem is not limited by space. So one of the nisim was that in the Beis HaMikdash, people would be standing there, and it was very crowded when it came down to time to bow down. There was always plenty of room for everyone to bow down. So even though it seems to be much smaller, but the space was not the issue. So this is the Ezra Yisrael. That's where the Yisraelim stands, and it's 11 amos wide. From Shah Nicanor, right, going westward, this diagram of the top is west, Marav, as you can see, is 11 amos wide, and that's where the Yisraelim would stand. On the right and left side of Shah Nicanor, you see numbers 20 and 21, they were small side gates to Shah Nicanor called Kishpashim, and there are side gates also for entry into the Azara. After the 11 amos of Ezra Yisrael comes what's called Ezra's Kohanim. Again, another 11 amos leading up to the Mizbeach. That structure that you see in the center of the Azara, before the steps, that is the Mizbeach, the Mizbeach HaOla, the outside Mizbeach, Mizbeach HaChitzon, and there's 11 amos, which is Ezra's Kohanim, for like the Kohanim to stand, and before coming up to the Mizbeach. Separated between the Ezra's Kohanim and the Ezra's Yisrael, you see some small steps. The Gemara says in Midos, that there was a step which was an amma high, and on top of it was a thing called the Dukhan. The Dukhan, which today you associate with Birkas Kohanim, but there was a Dukhan also for the Levim to sing with musical instruments. When they poured wine on the Mizbech, the Levim would sing with musical instruments. We say the Shira, Ashir Shal Levim HaYom in the Beis HaMikdash, they would sing special songs. And every day had its own song. Every Yom Tov had its own song, and they would stand on the Dukhan and play musical instruments and sing. Not to confuse this with the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, which was outside. I have a couple one or two sources here for the for the musical instruments. We'll start with the trumpets, although the trumpets not necessarily take place on the Dukhan, but if you follow the link, which will be up in a second, it's also applicable to this week's Parsha if you're in Chutzpah Arts, because in Chutzpah Arts they're learning Parshas Baloscha this week, and the Parshas Baloscha, Hashem commands, Moshe Rabbeinu, Aseh Chashtei Chatzot of Kesef, make yourself two trumpets of silver. Now, if you follow the link over here, there are two pictures over here. The one on the right is a small portion of the Arch of Titus in Rome. When Titus destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, as I mentioned, the year 6870, plus minus, he carried the keil of the Beis HaMikdash to Rome. And to commemorate his victory, he put up a he put up a victory arch in Rome, which is standing to this very day. Source number 13, by the way, is... is a picture of the entire procession, the way the artist depicted it then. Two major items appear on this relief, and one of them is this table over here with two trumpets. And on your left, you see another picture of trumpets. These are modern trumpets. I'll mention that there's an institution in Yerushalayim called Machon HaMikdash, and here they are actually making kelim for the Beis HaMikdash, and trying to, it's not easy because we haven't had them for 1900 years, but they're trying to remake the kelim as they were 1900 years ago. So one of the first kelim that they made are these trumpets, and they put them on the stand. By the way, there is a link on the main link page, hold that off for a second, to the templeinstitute.org, which to their website, and a few of their pictures, a few of their artifacts. Artifacts, links 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 on the main source page all take you to the Temple Institute website. So you can see this stuff over there. We're taking a look now at the trumpets. Now the trumpets were used every day in the Beis HaMikdash, not on the Dukhan, as we mentioned, but on the other side of the Mizbeach, there was a table where they stood with the trumpets. And the reason why they appear, probably, the reason why they appear on Titus's arch, and two kelim appear on Titus's arch, one is the menorah and one is the trumpets. Now the menorah is very simple. The menorah was a symbol of the Jewish people even then, and the menorah was, of course, the victory Hanukkah time, so it's not surprising that the Romans wanted to show that they were superior over the menorah. But the trumpets, likewise, the pasuk says, if you're going to war, you should blast the trumpets, and then you'll be victorious. So in other words, that was a symbol of the Jewish victory, the trumpets. And that's probably how they made their way to this victory arch by Titus, to commemorate his victory, to show that we defeated these trumpets, and we took them to Rome. And back of the trumpets is a small thing over there, which some sign. We don't know exactly what that is. It could be part of a sign of a Roman legion. No one knows for sure what it is. There are a couple of suggestions, but we'll leave it at that. And let's go back to the... I'd like you to go now to link number 15, which will be posted, which is posted right now. And and if you take a look at it, this is what it would look like if you you're standing right inside the Ezra's. If you're standing inside the Ezra's Kohanim and you're facing the Mizbech. Now, a couple of words about this model. This model was designed by yours truly, using three-dimensional software. and it was made to scale. Unfortunately, it hasn't been completed, but if you go to the site, if you go to site number 9 on the on the source sheet, Virtual Beis HaMikdash, over there there's a model which is a format called VPY, and if you download the VPY viewer, then you can actually see and walk through this model. I put this up here as one of the views of the model, but this is to give you an idea of what it looks like when you're facing the Mizbeach and the functions that are going on in the Azara. Because the majority of the functions take place in this small stretch over here from the Ezra's Kohanim going on to the Heichal. So in the background you have the Heichal, and in the foreground you have the Mizbeach. And take a look at the Mizbeach here, and you see that the Mizbeach actually has different sizes. In other words, there's the bottom section, which does not go all around. It's just, we're looking at it facing, we're facing west, so we're looking at the eastern side of the Mizbeach, and the bottom part doesn't go all around, it just ends at the right corner. On top of it, that's one amma high. On top of it, you have a section that goes 5 amos high, taking you to a small platform. Then you have another section, 3 amos high, which takes you to the top, and then you have 4 corners. All told, the height of the Mizbeach is 10 amos. Now, in the Torah, it says that it should only, the Mizbeach should be 3 amos high, and that's the whole figure in Zvachim later on, although it says that it was 3 amos high. But there's a machlokus whether the Mizbech and the Mishkan was really 10 amos or not. The Rambam passed that it was 10 amos, and the Rambam says the Mizbech in the Mishkan, and the Mizbech in the Beis HaMikdash, and the future Mizbech in the third Beis HaMikdash will all be 10 amos high. The center of the Mizbech is marked with a red marking, which in Hebrew is called the Chut HaSikra. It's a red thread, which actually separated the Mizbeach, two parts, the lower part and the upper part. The function, the importance of the separation was because there are different parts of the Mizbeach where the blood of the Kabanos has to be put. Certain Kabanos, and most Kabanos, went on the bottom of the Mizbeach, and usually they only went on two corners. For an Ola, a Shlomim, for example, and an Asham, the blood went on the bottom of the Mizbeach and it went only on two corners. It didn't go on all four corners, it went in two corners, even though the Torah says Sovid, which is surrounded with Bech, two corners is enough. Because if you have it on the northeastern corner and on the southwestern corner, so then you actually have it on all four sides. Why didn't they put the blood on all four corners? Because as we mentioned, you see the bottom part of the Mizbech called the Yisod, the foundation. The foundation did not surround the entire Mizbech. The foundation only surrounded the northern part and the western part. And it went a drop on the east and the south. For a reason that the Gemara explains later on, in sixth perek, the Gemara explains why. It's not relevant for us now. So therefore, the blood was only put on those two corners, and it had to be put on the bottom of the Mizbeach. These Kabanos, when the animal was shechted, take a look on the right side, you see a bunch of rings. There are 24 rings, though maybe not all of them appear in the picture here, but there are 24 rings, which were used, the families of Kohanim were divided up into 24 mishmaros, 24 groups, 24 families who alternated on a weekly basis. So each one had their own ring, and so when they shechted an animal, in order to keep the animal in place, and it shouldn't move, so originally they used to tie the animal up or whatever, or make it bleed a little so that it was blinded, it didn't see what was going on. But in the end, Yochanan Kohen Gadol made these rings, Tabor HaKarka, he made these rings in the ground, and in it, they locked the animal's head, and they shechted it, and that's where they shechted the animal. The animal was shechted over there. It didn't have, so the difference, again, it depends on the type of Kabbalah. If it was Kodesh Kodashim, such as an Ola, a Chatos, or an Asham, it had to be shechted in the northern part of the Azara. Meaning, from the Mizbeach and until the wall, the northern part, how far it went east or west, that's a machlokas, but it had to be north of the Mizbeach, that's what it could be shechted. If it was shechted anywhere else, it was possible. Any other, the Kabbalahs that are kachim kalim, could be shechted, as we mentioned before, in the entire Azara. And then, of course, if they're shechted in the Azara, they're not necessarily shechted in these rings. You can imagine that on a day like Erev Pesach, when we're talking about hundreds or thousands of carbon Pesach, not everyone was shechted in the ring. There's definitely no room for everyone to do that. In general, if possible, Kavanah Tzibur was shechted in the ring, but other than that, wherever there was vacant space, which was in a permissible area, that was okay. So the blood at the main things done to a carbon, especially shechita, the animal is shechted. It can be shechted by anyone, not necessarily a kohen, because shechita is not considered avoda. Anyone can shecht, anyone that slaughtered the animal, there's no problem with that. But after that, from then on, the kohanim come to do the work. And the kohanim, the next avoda is Kabbalah. Kabbalah means to accept the blood. The blood has to be accepted directly from where the throat of the animal, where it was shechted, directly into a nizrak, into a kli, into a utensil which contained the blood. That is called Kabbalah. If the blood spilled onto the floor, that was already disqualified. You cannot gather it on the floor and put it back into a mizrach, and directly from the animal's head straight into the mizrach. Then the third avoda was holacha, where the kohen took the mizrach and walked to the mizbeach, and the fourth avoda was zrika. Now these are the most important avodas, and without these four avodas, the carbon will be possible. All other avodos, which followed or preceded, are not ma'akid b'diyavad, which means even if they weren't done, the carbon can still be kosher. But if there's no shechita or kabbalah or halacha to bring it to the mizbeach or zrika, so then the carbon is disqualified. Now, we mentioned that there's two parts, two types of kabbanos. There is a kosher kabbalah, there are kabbanos which are put on the bottom part of the mizbeach, and those are the shlamim, the ola, the asham, and then there is the chatos. The chatos is sprinkled on the top part of the mizbech, and the chatos is put on the four corners of the mizbech, and that's number one. That's the one difference. It's not on top, it's not on bottom, it's not on top. And the second difference is that when the kohen does zrika on the lower part of the mizbech with the ola or the shlamim, he doesn't use his finger. He takes the utensil, the mizrach, the receptacle, and splashes it against the side of the mizbeach, and that's it. And that's it. When it comes to the chatos, he takes it with his finger, and he dips his finger in, and he applies it to the corners of the mizbeach, the chatos, and applies it to the corners of the mizbeach. So that's the difference between the chatos, which is on the top, and the almost all other kabbanos which are done on bottom. Certain kabbanos that were done on bottom didn't have to be done on both corners. It was enough to put it anywhere on the mizbeach opposite the yisod. That's like the Korban Pesach. Okay, on top of the mizbeach, in this diagram here. The diagram, unfortunately, has not been completed, but in the diagram over here, you see the black dome in the center. The black dome in the center is the pile of ashes that comes from the burnt carbon. The animal is later skinned, and if you take a look on your right side, you see, like, pillars and tables. And why this was done exactly in this format is a long story. Time does not permit to explain. You have shulchanos, and you have amudim, you have pillars. On the pillar there were hooks, and the hooks, you hung the animal on the hooks, and then the animal was skinned, and the animal was dissected, and then it depends what type of carbon is, and that, based on that, it depends also where the rest of the animal went. If it was a carbonola, the animal was dissected to pieces, the animal was skinned, the skin is given to the kohanim, which they could use to make into leather, etc. The rest of the animal was dissected and burned on the mizbech. Now, in the mizbech here, you don't see the fires. They were basically, in general, two ma'arochas, two piles of wood burning at all times. One was the big one where the kabbanos went. The other was a smaller one where the fire for the ketores went, that was taken inside. That was a carbon over. If it was all other carbonos, the fat of the carbon was separated. The term describes it in Bashi Sayikra, and the fats were separated. These are called Amorim, and they were brought up and burnt on the Mizbeach. And the rest of the animal was eaten. In most cases, the certain carbon is not, but that had to be burned outside, but not on the Mizbeach Achita. If the blood went on the Mizbeach Achita and on the outside Mizbeach, the animal was eaten. And that depends what type of carbon it was. If it was a it was Kachem Kadoshim, it was eaten only to the Kohanim and in the Azara. If it was Kachem Kalim, it is eaten by the owners, and it can be eaten in the entire city of Yerushalayim. On the left side of the Mizbeach, what you see is a ramp, and the ramp in Hebrew is called the Kevesh, and the reason why they had a ramp is because the Torah forbids v'lo sala b'ma'alos al Mizbechi. You should not ascend my Mizbeach with steps. So there's no steps leading up to the Mizbeach. You have a ramp, and that ramp, we'll see another diagram in a couple of moments, the ramp comes up from the south, leading up onto the Mizbeach. And in the back, behind the Mizbeach, you already see the Heichal, and let's go back to the Tiferes Yisrael diagram. Back to the Tiferes Yisrael diagram. You see the Mizbeach from a top view, and that's number 47, and 48 is the Kevesh, the ramp, and also take a look from the ramp, you see two small little ramps separating to both sides. That's a Gemara in Zvachim, that's on a base. On a base, if you have a Gemara handy, you'll see another diagram of those small Kevashim, small ramps going down. Now, to save time, in order to make it able to go around to different parts of the Mizbech, because as we saw, there are different platforms on the Mizbech. There's the upper platform, and then there's the lower platform, which you walked around the corner, that's called, I forgot to mention, I'm sorry, it's called the Sovev. Sovev needs to walk to go around, and that's the lower platform where the Kohen would go and apply the blood of the Karban Chatos on the corners of the Mizbech. So those are the small ramps, which you see over here. To the right of it, you see number 46, you see the 24 rings, and then 45, you see the tables, and 44, you see the pillars. That's not exactly the way I made it in my model. Again, there's so many different opinions on it, and when you make a model, you know, you're compelled to take one opinion, and that's it. Now, take a look at the Mizbeach over here. The Mizbeach is situated in the majority of the Mizbeach is in the southern part, meaning in the left part of the Azara. But you have different opinions in the Gemara where the Mizbeach actually stood. Did it stand in the southern part? Did it stand exactly opposite in the center of the Azara? Did it stand in the northern part? There are so many different opinions. This over here, the way it's done, is based on the way the Rambam draws it in Hilchos Beis HaBchira, and the Rambam does it based on Maseches Midos. Maseches Midos is a particular Tana of Reza Miyakov. So that's the way it appears here, but again, just because it appears here, that doesn't mean there's no other possibilities. There are definitely other possibilities. Let's continue walking between the Mizbeach. We get to another section separating the Mizbeach and the Heichal. Is a section called Bein Ha'ulam V'la Mizbeach. Between the Ulam and the Mizbeach, which was holier than the year of the Mizbeach itself, and you see number 52, and 52 is the year of the Kiyar. If you can bring up source number 7, source number 7, this is the Kiyar, and as I mentioned to you, this source, which in a moment the link will appear on your page, this site comes from Machon HaMikdash, the Temple Institute in Yerushalayim, where they make Kedem, and this is the Kli that they made, the Kiyar. I said in the Torah, but since here in the Choshes, Makana in the Choshes, this is the Hebrew site, this is the English site that I have up here. It's made from copper, a kiyar, and a kan. A kan is a basin, and is the base, sorry, and the kia is the what has the water inside, and it was made from copper, which as you see here in the reconstruction, it's also made from copper. And over here you can see there's about six, if I remember correctly, there are six forces coming out. The minimum is two. We know that in the second Beis HaMikdash there was a Kohen Gadol named Ben Katin who made 12. He made a kia with 12, and who made a kira with 12 forces. Now the kira is
there a question? Anyone has a question? Okay, go ahead.
Okay, the kira is essential because any Kohen, when he comes into the Beis HaMikdash to do avoda, the first requirement that he has before he can do any avodah, before he can even touch any kli, is he must wash his hands and feet. And this is called kiddush yadayim v'raglayim, sanctifying his hands and feet. Now take a look, if you see the bottom picture over there on this website, you see a kohen over here, or a diagram of a kohen. First of all, what is the kohen wearing? He's wearing special bigdei kahuna. He's wearing special begadim that the kohen wears. The kohen wears four begadim only. No more, no less. If he wears anything less or more, he is disqualified from doing avodah. Meaning any avodah must be done by a kohen. If he does not have these begadim on, or he has something extra, he is disqualified. He is not considered a kohen. The four begadim are made from linen. Four garments are made from linen. They include the mechnasayim, pants, the kishones, tunic, the avnet, which is a sash, a belt, and the mikbos, which is the hat. They're all made from linen only, and it's a whole story to make them. The Temple Institute, when they reconstructed these, the garden, it's a lengthy, expensive process. It's not easy to make, and that's all the Kohen wore. And you can imagine, sometimes during the avodah in Yerushalayim, it snows also sometimes in the winter, and the Kohen has to walk barefoot. He's not allowed to wear any shoes. No one wears shoes in Harabayis, period. But he can't wear socks or anything because the Kohen gets his kedusha from the floor, which was sanctified by David HaMelech, and he cannot have anything separating between him and the floor. So they have to walk barefoot, and you can imagine walking barefoot in the cold weather is not the healthiest thing, and therefore the Mishnah Shkolim says the Kohanim is a special doctor who's in charge of the welfare of the Kohanim to make sure that they stay healthy. The diet also, they didn't eat the whole time, but not necessarily, you know, such a healthy diet, and that's why they have a special doctor watching over them. Now, the Kohen over here is washing his hands and feet, as you can see in the diagram. He's obligated to wash both hands and both feet, right hand on right foot, left hand on left foot, and that's how we. That's how he washed his hands. And again, if he did not do this, then his avoda, his service in the Beis HaMikdash is disqualified and invalid. So it was essential. This essential part of kira to be in place. Since you mentioned, if you can go back to the source page. Okay. If you go to link number 17, from the source page, this is a nebel. This is one of the musical instruments, also done by the Temple Institute, and the Levium would sing and play musical instruments. On the Dukhan, and we know Saint Tehillim, Halu B'Nevel V'Chinor. So what's interesting is that these coins, if you take a look at this picture over here, if the link will go up in a second, take a look at this, the top, which says 240 or 239, these are pictures of ancient coins from the days of Bar Kokhba. And Makoch needs a lot of motifs on these coins to show his yearn for rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. Although there's a whole issue, historically did Makoch build the Beis HaMikdash to recapture Yerushalayim? Today it's almost definite the answer is no, but he wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash. And a lot of his coins show his desire for building the Beis HaMikdash, and some of his coins contain musical instruments, including chaserot, trumpets, which I mentioned before, and here we see the navel, and some contain the kinar, and the one on the bottom is a picture from the Temple Institute, and they reconstructed the navel based on what we see in the coin, bring up, please, another link, link number 14. This is, I must say, a little large. May take you a couple seconds to bring up. These are pictures of the facade of the reconstruction of the facade of the Heichal and the Ulam, which we're about to enter. So I don't think that we'll be able to finish this issue heavy. The picture didn't come out so good. Taking a couple seconds to load. I'm just waiting for the bottom. These two coins over here, take a look at the bottom of the page. The facade of the Heichal and the Ulam, I'll try to point you to another link where you can actually see the coins much better. But when you get to the bottom of the picture, on the right side you see the remains of a coin. Now this coin, which is pretty enlarged here, the joint, is a coin of a king named Matityahu Antigonos. He is one of the last Hashmonai kings before the Hashmonai dynasty was obliterated by King Herod. And this coin of his, which was a small bronze pluto, not very significant, two sides of it, on the right, on one side he had a joint of the menorah, which you can see on the right side of the page, and on the other side he had the shulchan of the lechem aponim, which you can see over here. So these are two kelim that stood in the Beis HaMikdash itself, and this is probably the most accurate design that we have of these two kelim. The menorah are a little hard to see here, but the branches are oval, not semicircle, and not diagonal. Why did I mention not diagonal? Because the Rambam and others draw the menorah with diagonal branches. And the Rambam was explicit with it, and his son writes, my father did this because that's the way it should be, and not in a semicircle. So there are different opinions. We don't pass an halacha based on archaeological findings. It's true that most archaeological evidence points to the fact that the menorah branches were semicircle or oval, but there are a few archaeological artifacts that do have diagonal menorahs. But that's... I'll take it to the two Bar Kokhba coins. If you can go back to the main source page for a second, please. Okay, it's bring it up. This is I'll bring another link to this Bar Kokhba coin. Bar Kokhba had two major coins showing the entrance to the Ulam and the Heichal. And the outer room is called the Ulam, and the inner room is called the Heichal. This coin that you see over here is one of two. Now, only two such coins have been found. As opposed to the other coin, hundreds of coins, this is only two coins have been found, and this depicts what the person stood outside. Take a look on the right side of this page over here, the entrance to the Ulam. You see a sketch from same thing called Chanukah Shabbos, if I remember correctly, where you see the different steps leading up into the gate and leading up into the gate of the Yule. I'm putting up, we're going to pick up another link now, which does not appear on the main page. If you look at this, this is a drawing of the Heichal, the Ulam, and the Heichal and the Kodesh HaKodashim. What's interesting about this is you can click on the different parts of it, and it'll take you to different pages explaining the functions of this. I put it up especially with different colors so that you can tell the difference. This is the building of the Heichal, which is, as I mentioned to you, an upside-down T. 12 steps led up to it because it was 6 amos higher above the level of the... it was 6 amos above the level of the Hazara. And there's actually 3 parts to this building. The entrance, the wide part, is called the Ulam. The Ulam is a wide entrance which actually does not serve for any major function. It's an empty, from all we know, it's an empty room. There were certain items in the room, but it didn't serve as a major function. That's the right part of the section. On both sides of the Ulam, you see a purple area. The purple area is called Beis HaKhalifa. Beis HaKhalifa is where they store the knives for shechting the animals. There were different cubbies. Each Mishmar, each family of Kohanim had their own cubby where they store their knives. From then on, from person went into the Heichal. The Heichal itself over here is in red. And in the Heichal, there are basically 3 major kelim. On the right side, I don't have them here in the picture, I'm sorry. On the right side was the Shulchan, where the Lechem HaKohanim stood. On the left side was the menorah. And in the center, a little drawn farther out, meaning downwards, east, was the Mizbech of the Kedosh. Now these functions, the functions of these, the times of when they function, vary. The Shulchan, the once a week on Shabbos, the Kohanim would place the Lechem HaKohanim together with 2 spoons of Lavona, and they would sit there for a week, and the next week the Kohanim would come and replace it with new bread and new Lavona and eat the old bread. There was a miracle that happened was that the bread remained fresh throughout the week, and a week later they came and they ate the bread, and the bread was fresh. On the left side was the menorah. The menorah was lit every evening, and every morning there was an avodah called Hatzavas HaNeros. Hatzavas HaNeros meant to clean out the burned out wicks and replace it with oil and make it ready for the lighting of the following evening. The Ketoret was a Mizbech in the center, which every morning and every evening they placed Ketoret on this Mizbech and burned it, and burned the Ketoret on a hot pan of coals. And by the way, if you take a look on the main source page 11, there's a picture over there of 3 pans which were found in Dan. Dan is a place up north in Eretz Yisrael. We know that Yerov and Nevat made up of the Zohar over there, and they found them as Bech of Ketores. And when they took it apart, underneath they found 3 iron pans which were probably used also to bring in coals to burn the Ketores. So that was in the red area called the Heichal. Then there's a small yellow strip, which we'll get to in a moment. And then there's the blue section, which is the Kodesh HaKadosh. The Kodesh HaKadosh, when the first Beis HaMikdash had the Aron, and the Aron, the Kohen Gadol enters the Kodesh HaKadosh one day a year on Yom Kippur to be bringing the blood of the Par V'Sariah and to be Matzeh Ketores. And the Matzeh Ketores. And in the second Beis HaMikdash, there was no Aron. The Aron, as we mentioned to you, had been hidden away by King Yoshiyahu, and it was hidden away by King Yoshiyahu, was stored away because he knew that Bnei Yisrael were going to go into Golus, and therefore he hid away the Aron, and it was not just. In the second Beis HaMikdash, there was no Aron. And the Gemara in Yoma tells us that there were six things that existed in the first Beis HaMikdash and were not in the second Beis HaMikdash. And one of them was the Aron together with the Kaporis and the Kruvim. There's no Aron. So that was the Kedusha. But the second Beis HaMikdash was less, in a way, the existence of the Shekhinah was less in the second Beis HaMikdash than it was in the first. So it was actually an empty room. And in the second Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen Gadol would come in with the Ketores and place it on a stone on the floor instead of between the Aron, as he did in the first Beis HaMikdash. If you take a look at the yellow strip separating the blue and the red, the yellow strip is an Amma thick, and in the first Beis HaMikdash, there was a wall separating between the Kodesh and Kodesh HaKadosh. But in the second Beis HaMikdash, when they built it higher, there was no, the wall, they couldn't make a wall for technical reasons, and instead they cordoned off the Kodesh HaKadosh from the Kodesh by means of a parochas, a double parochas separating, because they weren't sure where the Kedusha of the Kodesh HaKadosh began and where the Kedusha of the Hechel ended. So that's why the yellow strip is there. Briefly, just mention a couple other things. The turquoise color surrounding the Hechel is the rooms called the Ta'im. There were 38 small chambers which were used for storage. They appear in Sefer Melachim, they appear in Sefer Yechezkel, and we know in the Mishnah. We don't exactly know the function, but it seems that they were meant for storage. On the right side, there is a staircase which took you up to the second floor. And on the left side, there's a room with yellow color, which was a place for the water to the drainage of the rain had to come down somewhere, so it came down probably through this room down to we're not exactly sure its function. It's only one reference to it in the Mishnah Maseches Midos, so it's called Beis HaMikdash HaMayim. So we didn't get to learn everything we'd like to today, but at least we got some basic major introduction to understand, to know what we're talking about, the different areas, the Yerushalayim, the Har Habayis, the Ezes Noshim, the Ezes Kohanim, the Mizbeach, and the Hechel with the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKodeshim.